This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome, one and all, to another day here at the Damage Report in the immediate lead up to the holidays. I don't know if you're excited. I'm excited partially because I'm going to be taking the next day or two off, but also excited for the news, which is interesting and rich and full of awful people. But most especially, I'm excited for our guest, Senator Nina Turner. Nina, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, John. It's so good to be here with you. You got to stop calling me guest. I'm a family member.
Of course, yes. You belong here more than me. I think most of the audience would agree on that. But I'm always glad to have you here. We've got a lot of important news to talk about. So, you want to have the right person for it, and we've got that today. So, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you.
And all of you out there, thank you for being here as well. We've got a lot that we're going to be talking about through the course of the next 90 minutes. So if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. We will, of course, be responding to your comments, tweets, super chats, all that. Also, I want to let you know that despite the fact that I'm going to be off for the next couple of days, the show is going to be here. So tomorrow, J.R. Jackson is going to be leading the show for Big News Wednesdays, joined by David Schuster. And on Thursday, Francesca Fiorentini is going to be leading, and Brett Ehrlich is going to be joining her. So it's just going to be sheer madness. I don't know what's going to happen on that show, but I don't think you're going to want to miss it. We'll be off for Friday, but we will be uploading new content to the channel, some interviews and things like that. So definitely stay tuned for that. And with that, are you ready, Nina? Jump into some news.
Ready to go.
Okay, let's do this. I have dramatic news. I don't have the soundboard that Cenk has, so I can't play the "we got them" sound effect, but we did apparently get them. Have you all been on social media? Did you see the big news update of the morning? According to a press release, members of the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers International Union have struck a deal with Kellogg's, and the strike is off. That happened apparently either early this morning, late last night. They've announced no takeaways, no concessions, also no permanent two-tier system, one of the biggest component of the ongoing strike negotiations. They say they have a clear path to regular full-time employment for the next 5 years. No plant closings, there's gonna be a moratorium on that. A significant increase in the pension multiplier and maintenance of cost of living raises. That's all the information I have immediately, Nina. But this strike has been going on since I think October 9th. And now the strike is off. They were
so
successful.
Damn good. So good. Just the courage to ask for more, to stick to it despite what the higher ups in Kellogg tried to do, even bringing in scabs, wanting to replace, was it 1,400?
They thought
they were going to do that. That's a mammoth. They were just talking trash. But I am so glad that the workers and their allies stuck through this. So to the workers in particular, but every single ally, people that either came by the strike site, sent money in, prayers, well wishes, anybody that was standing on the side of these workers, yay.
Yeah, and it's one that, you know, like this has been a big year for strikes. Some of them have gotten a little bit of press coverage, some haven't, but I have seen a lot of social media activity in support of these strikers. And we've seen the strikes all over. Like these were at different plants. We've had strikes in New York, we've had coal miners striking as well. And so I'm glad that it seems like there's at least a little bit of renewed grassroots support for these strikers. And we've had big wins. I mean, you know, the John Deere success early on. Now this, we've got some successful unionization finally at Starbucks. We're gonna have Starbucks. We're gonna have another election at the Amazon warehouse. So, I don't know, like amidst all of the other bad news that we've had for our entire lives, a little bit of good news for the labor movement. So that's certainly nice.
Some glimmer of hopes and hope, John and I. You know, speaking of hope, why don't the Congress just go ahead and pass the PRO Act to add to all these victories? That would be great.
I have to assume that either the parliamentarian wouldn't allow it, or I mean, they're not gonna break the filibuster, and the Republicans don't want workers to have any rights. So that's
that
fun.
Is true.
Anyway, so good news to start off the show. It really only leaves one thing, really. There's only one thing remaining. I can eat Pop Tarts again.
John, you should have let me know.
That was a difficult strike. I struck for almost a full week on Pop Tarts.
Yes.
No, but anyway, thank you to the workers who made this happen. Thank you to the workers of Kellogg's. Despite the fact that they came to an agreement, though, I just want to be clear, no thank you to Kellogg's, because this shouldn't have taken months of negotiations. And you shouldn't have, along the way, apparently removed Kellogg's branding from your Pop-Tarts box. How much do you know you're in the wrong when you have to pretend a product isn't yours anymore to get people to buy it? That is pathetic.
It is. That's a sign, in case you didn't know. That's a sign. Well, John, you and the Pop-Tarts for Pop-Tart for me. And I'm gonna let this out now. It's about to be out there. But I love, love, love the waffles.
Oh, wait. Eggo waffles?
Oh my God. Have you had
They make Eggo waffles?
The Belgium, they got some Belgium kind with Madagascar vanilla, baby.
Oh my God, these are fancy. These are international waffles. Yes. It's the UN of breakfast vanilla stuff. Wow, that's awesome.
You, I had to give that up. That was serious.
No, I know. Well, now tomorrow morning, it's back on with the waffles. I will say one of the most amazing things about this is like when the John Deere workers go on strike, I know what helping them solidarity looks like. With Kellogg's, it's everything. They just own all the food.
Yeah, they do, which is a problem. But
exactly. Everything. But anyway, good. I will say this is not one of my favorite flavors, but I'm gonna be getting brown sugar and cinnamon later on today. So anyway,
well deserved.
Thank you. Okay, well, with that, why don't we get back to our normally scheduled programming? Everybody's gonna need to buckle up because Pop-Tarts are all well and good. It's about to get a lot darker. So let's jump into this video. So that was not like WrestleMania or whatever, although I guess it's not impossible to imagine that he would come out to cheers at something, some sort of wrestling event. But that was the Turning Points America Fest or whatever. And Kyle Rittenhouse, an individual who everybody knows only because he decided to put himself in a position where he would kill multiple people, came out to that crowd, Nina, to raucous applause. They love him. They really, really love him because he killed people and got away with it. But don't be like weird and irrational about the state of the Republican Party and the conservative movement. It's not that they're like bloodthirsty fascists who long to kill their political opponents or anything. Nina, they just love killers. They love vigilante killers, and they are their new celebrities. Go out and kill as many people as possible, and you too might get to hang out with Matt Gaetz and Charlie Kirk or something.
It definitely sends the wrong message. Even if you believe legally, you know, he was in the right. This is really horrible. It is. And it's just going to reinforce the behaviors that they are exhibiting heretofore. So this is not new. Remember, even President Donald Trump said that he could go out on Fifth Avenue, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think it was Fifth Avenue. Said he could shoot somebody and commit murder and get off. So here we are. I mean, that they're picking, it makes no sense to reinforce this and to make it seem like he was somehow a martyr, which is not the case.
Yeah. Well, it makes no sense for our value system.
Yeah.
For theirs, I think it makes some sense. We're going to play a little bit more of that video and then we'll talk.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we're not gonna play anything of whatever he said or whatever because he doesn't know anything and his opinion doesn't matter. But as a symbol, he certainly matters. And the right has established through the course of this year, two symbols of their movement, two people that they go crazy for. There's the woman who was killed on January 6th and the guy who killed a couple people at a protest. Because that is what this cult is about. People who are willing to kill for the movement and people who are willing to die for the movement. It is a cult of death. And look, you can say, well, you're just a dumb lib. You're just like projecting that. Who are they cheering for at these events? What do you think? Like Mitch McConnell's not gonna get cheers like that. They bring out killers. They put up the photos of people who were killed because they believe Donald Trump's insane conspiracy theories. And again, I'll say the same thing that I've said every step along this way. We were told, how dare you imply anything about Kyle Rittenhouse's politics? How dare you imply that you know what he was thinking when he decided to go to Kenosha? And then he did a documentary with Tucker Carlson and he hung out with Charlie Kirk and he hung out with Steven Crowder and he hung out with Glenn Beck in The Blaze. And now he's going to these conservative things. It's looking a little bit less crazy to think that there might have been some sort of political motivation to all of this. What do you think, Nia?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no doubt. And we don't have to be naive about it. That is exactly what it is. And again, to reinforce that there is not some type of consequence, not even remorse for what happened is, again, the right is conflating so much when it comes to this. They're making it, they're to me, they believe that this is patriotic. What Rittenhouse did to them is a form of patriotism. That's a sad place to be.
Yeah, because you know, sort of traditionally, patriotism is supposed to be some sort of thing about what you've done for the country. You've sacrificed something. But Donald Trump has taken over that position. What will you do for Donald Trump? What will you do for that movement? And it's not even like that they totally have to just like these conservatives are sitting at home trying to come up with what to do. This sort of encouragement to vigilante violence during the protest was going on for literally months. He's just one of several people who decided to act on it. He's not the only one. There were other people who were attacking protesters and there were right-wing provocateurs going and killing cops to try to start a race war and those sorts of things. He's the one that they have plucked out of it because a jury said that what he did was totally cool. So they love that. They love the official recognition of their acts as being okay. That's what they wanna see. And I also wanna point out, by the way, we're gonna do a few more videos from that event, but that event just strikes me as so amazing. They did that pan, you saw that, Nina, around the room, and there was tons of people. It's a huge room. Obviously, an incredible amount of money went into this. And on the show yesterday, we were talking about the people who went. It's like all of the big right wing, like Fox News personalities.
Who's who?
All the craziest people in elected politics. And what strikes me is this would, like, an event like that could not happen on our side. Because, like, we are not, like, we will sometimes work with a Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer. But we don't agree with them on everything. We have a hostile relationship with those who are taking up these spots in Democratic leadership and these seats in Congress. We want a president who actually supports our values, would fight for our policies. And while we might occasionally once in a while appear on like an MSNBC or a CNN, we're incredibly critical of them because we don't agree. But on the right, it's uniformity. Their supposed right-wing media is like in form slightly different than the mainstream right media, but they believe the exact same things. They support the exact same policies. They use the same narratives. They support the same politicians. The donors are the same people. So the politicians, the establishment media, the independent media on their side all agrees on everything. And that's what is required to have all of the big names on both sides coming together, being supported by God knows how much money was given to them by millionaires and billionaires to run an event like this. Like, and I talk about this not just to identify the other side, but this is what we're up against. We're up against virtually everyone. The establishment Democrats, their donors, And also the entirety of the right, which is a monolith. It pretends that there's these distinctions or whatever, but they really are all in lockstep trying to stop any sort of progress, any sort of threat to the billionaire class.
No, that's exactly it. The corporatists of both parties mount up together. They go to the same dinner parties. They socialize in the same circles. That's it. And that is the machine we are fighting on the progressive left. You're absolutely right about that. And I don't know, John, if you remember a few years ago, it was 2016, also 2017. And this was led by the National Nurses United, but it was a people summit. Mm-hmm. Pretty hot. And just even thinking about, you know, we should do more of that. I know we got Netroots Nation and that kind of thing, but it would be great to see the left come together on the right, the progressive left, let me not confuse left, the progressive left to come together more often and lift one another and talk about how we move forward as a movement. Because yeah, they got it. They got a lock on that.
Exactly. Yeah, I wish that more of that was possible, but there's a couple impediments. I mean, we have no well-funded media infrastructure version of what they have. It doesn't exist. CNN, MSNBC, they might support gay marriage. They ain't left. They're barely liberal. Like on the policies actually matter. They don't support us. Sure. They've got millionaires and billionaires who are willing to throw endless amounts of money at PragerU and Daily Wire and all that stuff. There's no like good progressive billionaires that are helping out. Like they create these anti-Semitic like boogeymen that are supposedly funding all this. Doesn't actually exist. You know, and honestly, while we occasionally will sometimes link up with the relatively few progressive politicians that have been elected, honestly, even that linkage isn't as strong as I would like it to be in terms of supporting the media side of this movement. So there's a lot of work to
do something about it. Yeah, John, we definitely have to do something about it. So we're planting some seeds right now. We need a whole bunch of TYTs out there, but maybe, hey, yeah, who knows, TYT could host something and bring some of our more progressive left independent media folks in and some of the members of the Progressive Caucus in Congress and a whole lot of grassroots leaders and do something special for our side.
I'd like to see that happen.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, there's some stuff I did not like seeing happen, and we're gonna turn to a little bit of that right now. Let's jump immediately into this video. I apologize in advance, everyone.
So I'm walking around and seeing some good people, and I see white people, black people, brown people, yellow people. And then there's talk of freedom and loving America and conservative principles. Some crazy people in here were talking about how much they love this guy named Jesus. And then I said, oh, I know exactly what this is. The left calls this a white supremacist party. Okay. I know what I'm going to now.
Yes, the left calls it a white supremacist party. But it can't be, because as she says, when she goes in there, she sees white people, black people, brown people, yellow people. That is the evidence, Nina, that they're not the racists we unfairly present them to be.
The way she describes it is she sees the Rainbow Coalition. I mean, I hate to use that term because she has just spoiled it for me, but that's pretty much, and Jesus. However, mm-hmm. You don't talk about what would Jesus do on these issues that the progressive left is standing up for. I got a feeling, I got a hunch, at least the scriptures that I read, I think Jesus will be on our side.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, how much clapping do you think Jesus would have done as Kyle Rittenhouse was trotted out on stage?
Not a lot, not none at all. Zero clapping.
I'm an atheist, as I've said many times. But I honestly think some of the stuff that Jesus said is pretty cool. I like it. I think it would be great if like almost anyone other than the relatively small leftist Christian movement in the US actually believed any of it. He's super specific about what you're supposed to do. Like he literally says to turn the other cheek. I'm fairly sure it was specific in the Bible. Nope. Turning the cheek was cool couple thousand years ago. Now it's sort of outdated. I like the idea of blasting someone with an assault rifle. It's just like I'm not the one who says that this is the divine mandates of the creator of all reality. You guys say that. So why don't you pay attention to the things that he asked you to do?
No, we're going to do unto others as you would have them do unto you is the golden rule. And that golden rule is pretty much centered in all of the major religions of the world. There's some tenet of that. So you're absolutely right. I think Jesus would be for extending or having paid family leave. I damn sure know that Jesus would support Medicare for all. You know, there's whole scriptures in there about feeding the hungry and clothing the poor and going to visit people in prison. Yeah. Whole bunch of scriptures in there about that, but you won't hear them talk about that at those
events. Exactly. Yeah, and I don't look. I honestly I don't know what else to say about the ridiculous normalized racism and misogyny and anti-Semitism and all that. Like every couple of weeks, she like rolls the dice and it comes up with a group that she has to say something incredibly offensive and derogatory about. She knew that she was on camera. She knew that she had a crowd of thousands of people, and she thinks that talking about yellow people is awesome. And within her movement, she's right. I didn't hear boos. I didn't hear a lot of people like saying, no, that's not acceptable. We're better than that. I didn't hear that.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in the context that she was using it, but I have heard, you know, people like Dr. Cornel West use, you know, when you're talking about the rainbow concept, you use the color yellow. Some people may be offended by that. Some people might not necessarily. Coming from her, though, is not the same.
Yeah. Well, look, it's not up to me. Obviously, it's up to each individual, you know, how they prefer to be talked about. Absolutely. I don't think that she was asking people for their thoughts and then acting.
Oh, no. Oh, absolutely not. But I just wanted, you know, I have been in circles, you know, where that has happened in a very loving and uplifting way. And if it's, but you're right, if it's offensive to a group, definitely should not be used.
Well, we're running a little bit low on time. So note to the director, I'd like to jump ahead to the first of the Jesse Waters, because there's one more event making a lot of news today that we need to jump into. So if we could go directly to the first of those videos.
Now you're going for the kill shot. The kill shot with an ambush, deadly, because he doesn't see it coming. This is when you say, Dr. Fauci, you funded risky research at a sloppy Chinese lab, the same lab that sprung this pandemic on the world. You know why people don't trust you, don't you? Boom, he is dead. He is dead. He's done. Now, how you do that? 30 seconds. That's all you need. 30 seconds. Now you get that footage to us, you get it to Fox, you get it to Human Events, you get it to Breitbart, you get it to Daily Caller, you get it to the Turning Point pipeline. Imagine Tucker Carlson teases out of the A block, coming up. Brave college student confronts Lord Fauci at dinner. Exclusive footage, right back. Get us that. That's what we want.
Okay, so look, it's easy to get distracted by the second half of that, which is lame and cringy and poorly presented, and he's just not a compelling on-screen personality. And the idea that a random college person running up to Dr. Fauci and screaming a conspiracy theory at him that he heard on Fox News is hardly the compelling TV that Jesse Waters thinks it is. But Jesse Waters there in his presentation that is ostensibly about like owning Fauci on a conspiracy theory, just totally coincidentally, Nina, involved him talking about you ambushing him, using the kill shot, boom, he's dead. It only takes 30 seconds. This, of course, is an event that has vigilante killers on the docket with Jesse Waters there. So one of two things is the case. Either I and others are just so fundamentally irrational that I think he just accidentally used all of those terms in quick succession. And he wasn't trying to appeal to a crowd that we know has been taught to not only have normalized the idea that political violence is acceptable, but is increasingly bloodthirsty for it, has been trained through the whole QAnon thing to think that the greatest day in American history will be when all of their political opponents are rounded up and mass executed. Or alternatively, he knew what he was doing, Nina, and he specifically used these terms because he knew that they would love it. The idea of ambushing and killing Dr. Fauci.
Oh no, he was giving them all the red meat that they wanted and then some. It's the word kill shot. There, you know, you don't just accidentally use that word. There are many words that you might accidentally use, might pop up into your mind and out your mouth. Kill shot is certainly not one of them. Very deliberately laced into what he was saying about Dr. Fauci, just planting it,
Yeah.
No, we're
and
not.
I've never even heard, like, I'm not saying I've never heard the term kill shot, but it's not even like,
it's rare.
That's not even used in any of these contexts. He's stretching.
No. Yeah, he is. Deliberately.
Anyway, deliberately, and he knew what he was doing. So Dr. Fauci was asked to respond to this. This is, how much time has Dr. Fauci had to spend responding to insane conspiracy theories and calls to violence against him? But anyway, here he is.
The only thing that I have ever done throughout these 2 years is to encourage people to practice good public health practices, to get vaccinated, to be careful in public settings, to wear a mask. And for that, you have some guy out there saying that people should be giving me a kill shot to ambush me. I mean, what kind of craziness is there in society these days? That's awful that he said that. And he's gonna go very likely unaccountable. I mean, whatever network he's on is not gonna do anything.
I feel like that prediction is probably true, Nina. I doubt Fox is.
That network wants, they like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and it would be like if they wanted to send a signal, Fox, if in a crazy alternate universe, they wanted to send a signal that they don't support political violence, how easy would it be to just get rid of Jesse Waters? It's one of the most irrelevant people on their network. Like on a, like in comparison to the, like who's tuning in for Jesse Waters? But they will protect him. They will, because they want to appeal to that audience just as much as he individually does. He knew what he was giving them there. They, like this, when Paul Gosar did his video and he's like, ha, look at this, I can make a cartoon of me assassinating AOC. We said at the time, this is going to inspire even more. Because they know that it works. We got worked up about that. They did not. They loved it. They love Paul Gosar more than they did before. And so expect more of these threats of violence to come, not just from the politicians, but now the media as well. Like Greg Gutfeld this morning was talking about Biden being a racist with blood on his hands over COVID. Like they love this stuff and they want more of it. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, you know? Just totally irresponsible, John.
Yeah,
it's a lot of work to do.
Okay, there is. Okay, and so that is one set of obstacles that is between our movement and the outcomes we want. We're gonna take a short break and come back and talk about another one after this. Okay, everybody, a little bit of an update to our main story yesterday. Let's jump into this video.
I'm not blaming anybody. I knew where they were and I knew what they could and could not do. They just never realized it because they figure, surely to God, we can move one person. Surely we can badger and beat one person up. Surely we can get enough protesters to make that person uncomfortable enough. They'll just say, okay, I'll vote for anything. Just quit. Well, guess what? I'm from West Virginia. I'm not from where they're from. And they can just beat the living crap out of people and think they'll be submissive.
Okay. So that is obviously an incredibly irrational and emotional and petulant and fundamentally dishonest presentation of the idea of your constituents and others trying to get you to see reason and pay attention to the polling on issues in your state. But the overall message there, Nina, is that Joe Manchin is very angry. Because in the wake of him announcing that he was gonna unilaterally kill Build Back Better, people were critical of him. They were mean and he doesn't like it, Nina. And so you've been regularly critical of Joe Manchin on your social media, in speeches, in appearances. So would you like to take this opportunity to apologize to the great and distinguished senator?
No, John, hail to the no, absolutely not. He really has some nerves. He was whined and dined at the White House. You know, he was invited to Delaware. I'm surprised they're not throwing rose petals out for him to walk across in the way he has been treated by the administration and other of his colleagues. So what is he talking about battered? You know what battering is? Not being able to know that the child tax credit is going to be extended. Not being able to have paid family leave. Not having universal health care. And it's, I mean, that's being battered. Him battered, some nerve. You know, welcome to his world of privilege and BS. Because that's what he's throwing out there. The man is wrong. The majority of his state believes in the shell of Build Back Better, because that's exactly what it is at this point. And he made some deals and he just flat out said, you know what? I'm not going to go with what I said before. I am going to continue to stand in the way. And John, in that portion of it, he has been consistent. Even though you don't like it, I don't like it.
Yeah.
The movement doesn't like it. He has been consistently who he is. And basically what he has said is the hell with the people of my state. Y'all can throw out all the stats about poverty in my state or people not having teeth and needing dental care. You can throw out all the stats you want. And I don't care about if I don't care about the people in my state, I definitely don't care about the people of the United States.
Yeah, he doesn't, because why would he care? I mean, he's gonna be a senator for years from now. There's nothing in the law that could be done to recall him or whatever. The only option is to let's say he runs again, because he doesn't necessarily have to. He's independently wealthy. He could become a lobbyist. He'll be fine no matter what. If he does choose to run again, maybe we successfully beat him. But it's going to be hard, because replacing him in a primary is going to be difficult, because the Democrats are definitely going to still rally around him, despite the fact that he's been regularly punching them in the stomach every day for a year now. So that's going to be hard. Also, he's shielded by a media and a political establishment that's going to make it as hard as possible for his constituents to even understand the role that he played in this entire thing, which is why his approval rating is still as high as it is. And so it's insulation upon insulation from any consequence for his actions. It's super disheartening.
But then they go after the squad, call them naive. What were they thinking? And you know what? They were right. There should have never decoupled Build Back Better bill from the infrastructure bill. Should never have done it, because they lost their bargaining tool. And guess what? The squad members were right.
100% they were right. Yeah. Yeah.
But they get now vilified and Joe Manchin gets lifted by the mainstream media.
Yeah. Members of the squad getting invited over to the White House for fancy dinners and stuff like that to court them. No.
Or to Delaware. Do they have rose petals?
Yeah. What do they represent? Just the future of the party in the country. That's all.
That's all. Yeah.
I want to read a comment from an audience member about something that would be impossible, but I love the concept of it, of what could be done, can't, for economic reasons and all that. But Tizzap says, to defeat JoJo, all the workers of West Virginia should go on strike. Imagine if they did. Like, that if they all understood that he doesn't give a damn about them. He's a literal millionaire in a poor state that doesn't care if they ever get to retire, if they even have teeth for their senior years.
Right.
Doesn't want them to have the child tax credit that would go to like one out of six of his constituents, literally our kids who would be benefiting from it. Doesn't care. Doesn't give a damn about them. He's off on his yacht. Imagine if the workers said, okay, we can't recall you, but we can't afford to wait a couple of years. So we're going to put down our tools. We're not working. And then the business leaders eventually would have to pressure him as well. Until we get this guy to step down, we're done. If you're telling us we don't have a democracy, that you can just do whatever you want, you're a king. Okay, you can be a king, but what's gonna be the state of your kingdom? Now, maybe you wouldn't care for that either. I don't know. And it's not gonna happen, because everybody's so poor off already that they can't afford to do that sort of thing.
No.
But man, I would just love to see it.
Yeah, it's definitely a great sentiment for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's it for Manchin for today. We'll see what ends up happening with him, but we have some other weird news. So let's jump immediately into this video.
Both the president and I are vaxxed, and did you get the booster?
Yes.
I got it too. Okay, so.
No. That's all. It's a very tiny group over there.
Okay, so what you saw there was Bill O'Reilly and Donald Trump, who are doing this like roving tour of events that are apparently fairly poorly attended, which I think is hilarious. But anyway, he says that they're vaccinated and that they got the booster, and people started to boo. People self-selected as wanting to attend an event with Donald Trump and Bill O'Reilly booed them because they said that they got a booster. And Donald Trump can say, oh, it's a little group over there. It's such a little group, you could have ignored it, but you had to respond. I don't think it was that little of a group, Nina Turner. What do you think?
Listen, he created this monster. Mm-hmm. And now he has to deal with it. And that's part of the challenge. I'm really glad because he changed his tune. I think he said he never would get the booster. So in a way, John, I'm going to try to make something positive out of this foolishness. I'm glad that he got it. And I'm glad that he's put out there that he did, because probably some of the people who follow him and lean on his every word may second think their decision and say, well, he got it, maybe I should too. I think there might be. They might do that. So in a weird kind of way, he might turn the tide in some of that crazy over there that he created. Maybe, though. He created
it. That's 100%. I would love that. Look, I despise Donald Trump as much as anyone despises anyone on this earth. I said years ago I made the pledge that I would never be fair to him. But I have regularly given him credit when he's gone on like Sean Hannity or whatever and said that he was vaccinated or that people should get vaccinated. Now he's gradually a little bit backed off of that because he's gotten booed before for saying this. But he's at least admitting that he did get the booster, which not everyone will. Ron DeSantis was asked about it by Maria Bartiromo like yesterday, and he refused to say whether he had gotten it or not. So at least Donald Trump, for all of, like, he's a fundamentally evil man who's done horrendous things, has caused the deaths of countless hundreds of thousands of people, and has done more than any other individual to encourage millions of Americans to believe that the literal worst, weakest parts of themselves are their best attributes. But he is at least being kind of honest about the vaccine. It's a weird world we live in.
It is. Even my grandmother used to say that a broke clock is right twice a day. So, John, you know, hey, every now and then you got to give him a little credit. I'm glad for all the things he could have said. I'm glad that he did admit that he got the booster, booze and all. Yeah,
exactly. Now, he also bragged about the vaccines being developed under his administration. He called the effort historic, which it was, thanks to the work of the scientists who did it, not him personally. Anyway, he took personal credit for saving tens of millions of lives around the world. Fine, whatever. It had nothing to do with him. The idea, I've been saying this for a long time. Scientists made it. You know, people with beakers and they're wearing goggles and stuff. They made the vaccine. What did he do? He'll say, well, I gave them money. I told them they should do it. Okay. Can you think of anyone who would have been president amidst COVID and not thought, we should probably fund vaccines? It's the most obvious default thing ever. Like, it's like he wants basic credit for wearing shoes or something. Like, it's the most, what? You want it's credit basic for that? It's so
basic. It's basic, John. It's basic.
But fine, at least he'll admit that he did it. Now, in response, so you saw in real time the response to those boos. Bill O'Reilly ended up talking to a journalist at the Daily Beast, and he had this to say. He says, I told him that today, he called me. I said, this is good for you that they were booed. This is good that people see another side of you, not a political side. You hold the truth, you believe in the vax, your administration did it, and you should take credit for it because it did save, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of lives. So that was in response to Trump saying that he had his feelings hurt by the boos, which again, I don't like the people who are booing for that reason, but I do crave his feelings being hurt as the smallest possible consequence for his horrendous actions.
Now so he's anyway got you all over the place. You feeling all the feelings.
Oh, it's difficult. I don't know what to think. But anyway, I wish that it works. I wish that, like, him throughout this saying, I made the vaccine. It's a lie, but I made the vaccine. The fact that that doesn't break through, I think, is one of the most amazing individual political realities. That the right-wing media was able to successfully demonize, like, the chief accomplishment of the guy at the head of the movement, and that people went with the media rather than the leader. I think that that is actually fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And a bit dangerous. All of it's mm-hmm. dangerous when you got this absolutism mentality floating around and that people can be so manipulated.
Yeah.
Very dangerous.
Okay, well, with that, we're going to take a second little break. And when we come back, maybe a little bit of good news amidst all of what's going on in the pandemic. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, yes, no, we're gonna do the story. Don't worry, we're gonna do the story. Okay, let's jump into this video here.
Why not just make them free and give them out to and have them available everywhere?
Should we just send one to every American?
Maybe.
Then what happens if every American has one test? How much does that cost? And then what happens after that?
All I know is that other countries seem to be making them available for in greater quantities for less money.
Okay, so that was Jen Psaki just a couple of weeks ago. We talked about it on the show. She was asked, as we're launching into the Omicron wave and cases are going up, why not just make the tests available? And she not only had to represent the wrong position, which, you know, who knows if that's her position, the way that she answered it just seemed so needlessly condescending towards a very reasonable and serious question. But in any event, a lot can change in a couple of weeks, including apparently the stance of the administration on this topic. So after mocking the idea of sending out all of these tests, President Biden is gonna do a conference today, and he's gonna announce some new steps to confront a surge in coronavirus cases, including readying 1,000 military medical professionals to help at overburdened hospitals, setting up new federal testing sites, deploying hundreds of federal vaccinators, and buying 500 million rapid tests to distribute free to the public. So what do you know? Apparently they asked the question, well, how much would that cost? And then they decided, wait, we have calculators. Why don't we figure that out? And apparently, Nina, they did, and they will be available.
The miracle of, what did she just say at this press conference? Oh, you better believe people were going ham when she gave. And you're right, it is the condescension. And I'm not sure if in that moment she knew exactly what to say. I think you're right to say that, John, whether or not she was actually speaking directly on behalf of the White House because she knew or because she was just fumbling in the dark. I'm gonna go with number two. She was just fumbling in the dark, which is why she kept asking the reporter questions. But egg on your face, baby. Egg on your face. What do you want us to do? Purchase a kit for every American? Yes, we do, because we are trying to stop a mammoth called COVID in its next iteration, which is now the Omicron. Yeah, Jen Psaki. That is exactly what we want you to do.
Yeah, and by the way,
I'm happy about this. I'm skipping.
I think it's a great move. I love that the rapid test too, because look, testing is great, but a rapid test allows you to instantly change your behavior.
That's it.
Like, if it's not the rapid one, then are you potentially gonna expose more people? There's just such holes there. And those rapid tests were so expensive. Like, to be responsible, I had to get rapid tested once or twice. It was $195. That is brutal.
Yeah, so anyway. I did too. And I'm glad he's sending military help to the hospitals. I mean, a big ad was taken out even here in my hometown by the hospitals saying help.
Yeah. They need it. So unfortunately, it's not until January that they'll be available. So in a few weeks, they're gonna have a new website where people can have them sent to their home. And that is great. And it also, I wanna make sure that like the big headline is about the test, but there's more to it than just that. However, they're being clear, this is not about locking the country down. They're not gonna do any sort of, like it's gonna be extra aid. No significant social restrictions or anything. So keep your expectations moderated, I guess. Anyway, okay, with that, I think we can talk about one more story. I think that we have time. Okay. For some time, responsible politicians, including people like AOC and Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, have been making sure that people know that as we launch this pandemic, people are feeling the economic strain, and eventually that is going to be manifested in increased evictions, which we are now seeing. But there's another aspect to this story, a more pervasive structural aspect that might not be as like as news-wise sexy as a person being thrown out during a pandemic, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't know about it. So I want to talk about this amazing reporting that I saw from NPR about mobile and manufactured home lots being bought up by big investors and what ends up happening when they do that. So they report that previously a lot of these places where mobile homes are clustered are owned by so-called like mom and pop owners, like small businesses sort of. Now we're facing a generation of them retiring and selling their land and the ownership of these lots and the administration of them. So investors and companies are coming in and buying them up. What is being found is that when they do that, they then raise fees and rents for the land under the homes and evict people who can't pay. Housing advocates say it's a disturbing trend that they've seen all over the country. So that's bad immediately, but wait until you find out what they're doing. So George McCarthy is an economist and also the president of the nonprofit Lincoln Institute of Land Policy. He says they come in to buy the parks, then they raise the rent, sometimes 20%, sometimes 50%, sometimes 70%. And that is bad for individuals, but they're doing it for a reason. So when they come in and they raise the rent, that increases their immediate cash flow and it increases the evaluation of the supposed value of that property, of that company. It will then be rated as being more valuable because in theory it could be bringing in more money. What they do then is take that increased valuation of the land and barter that against a loan that they then take to use to buy more lots of land and administer more mobile and manufactured housing. So they can in the short term gobble up tons of property by like artificially jacking up prices. And the loans that they're getting, by the way, are not just private loans. They can be very low interest rate loans because they're guaranteed by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Those are government agencies that are supposed to be helping regular people afford home ownership, but instead their loans are being given to massive investors who are then using it to buy up and kick out people from their homes. And apparently all of this is legal. There's nothing stopping them from doing this. And they're very enthusiastic about it. One CEO of something called Haven Park Communities says that these loans have supercharged their asset acquisitions. They use the loans to buy more than $100 million in just a short period of time. I apologize, we don't have much time, Nina, but just fast reaction.
Yeah, no, it should not be allowed whatsoever. They need to change policies. And that co-op idea that came out of this story where the people who live on those properties should be able to come pull their money together, buy them and own their own property.
That's a great idea. Nina Turner, as always, thank you so much for joining us. I hope that you have the absolute best holidays ever.
Happy holiday, John, and to the entire Dragon Squad. Nothing but love for you, baby.
Thank you. More after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.